What a nice one from Bobby McFerrin and Esperanza Spalding. That was Swing Low. Trevor Hall in front of that, joined by Brett Denon, gave us Put Down What You Are Carrying. And it was Joseph Arthur with Saint of Impossible Causes. You're listening to Undercurrents. I'm Gabriela. Stay tuned because we've got the National coming up in just a minute.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
Do you love music but don't have the energy to find new stuff? Can't decide whether you want to hear indie rock or hip hop, electronic music or singer-songwriters? Then tune into Another Late Night every first Saturday at 3 a.m. only on KBOO Community Radio, or stream online at kboo.fm/anotherlatenight, where we've got it all.
Hello and welcome to Pathways, where you are invited to join me for a visit with leaders in personal development and cultural evolution. This is your host, Paul O'Brien. Two things happening at the same time can well be more than pure chance, coincidence, or dumb luck. The phenomenon was named synchronicity by the great depth psychologist Carl Jung. According to today's guest on Pathways, awareness of synchronicities can instill peace and harmony in the self and in the world beyond us too. Our guest shows that by recognizing synchronistic occurrences as a connection to a much larger, older pattern, you can tap into the myths of culture and ancient timeless wisdom. It's amazing to realize that we can use such awarenesses to guide ourselves away from suffering and into tranquility. Our guest today is Alan Hunter, author of The Path of Synchronicity, Align Yourself with Your Life's Flow. Alan has written fiction for most of his life, but he's best known for his nonfiction. His work explores the intersections of literature, memoir writing, and the ways of the heart. He is a professor of literature and a counselor with a doctoral degree from Oxford University. British by birth, he has traveled extensively in Europe, India, Africa, and Peru before settling in Boston, Massachusetts, where he lives now. He's published 12 books, including Write Your Memoir, The Sole Work of Telling Your Life Story, and Princess, Frogs, and Ugly Sisters, The Grimm Brothers' Healing Tales. His most recent book, Gratitude and Beyond, Five Insights for a Fulfilled Life, looks at moments of change in our lives and how gratitude can lead us to deeper understanding about what it means to live well. Alan has spent much of his professional life exploring how literature and storytelling, including soap operas, tap into the deep and unarticulated needs of society, and especially the ways of the heart. It is from these powerful influences, he says, that we shape our lives and ultimately our destiny. And I want to mention the fact that Alan has been on Pathways before, and despite the fact that he doesn't use this word in his bio, I consider him to be a modern philosopher, and I have gained so much benefit from that aspect of his work. Well, hello, Alan, and welcome to the Pathways show.
Well, thank you for that lovely introduction, Paolo, and it's a great pleasure to be speaking with you again. We have great conversations.
Well, we're going to talk about synchronicity, which is something that we've both been involved with for quite a long time. And for non-disclosure to our audience, I'll mention the fact that my book, Intuitive Intelligence, has a chapter on synchronicity, and it kind of flows throughout the book. And my work in terms of creating a Western version of the I Ching is all about synchronicity. In fact, I called it synchronicity in its earliest incarnation, its software incarnation. I made software that would allow people to do an I Ching reading and leverage the power of synchronicity. So we have this passionate interest in common, and I really appreciate that. But why don't we start by, you're the expert in this interview, and I want to ask you, how would you define synchronicity?
It's a slippery concept, because some people would say, oh, synchronicity is chance, it's dumb luck, it's just what happens. And I would say, well, you know, you're entitled, and if you want to see it that way, that's fine. But what I would like to suggest is that synchronicity is part of a series of what I can only describe as laws. Synchronicity has to do with what we see in terms of manifesting and what we see in terms of finding a life path. And that is, well, and also with the ancient concept of karma. Now, to step back a bit here, karma isn't just some convenient belief conjured up by Hindus about 10,000 years ago. It's based on a very straightforward system that says what goes around comes around. What you do affects what you become. And we all know this to be true. The nature of our decisions affects where we wind up later in life.
Yeah.
Now, synchronicity is actually part of that law. It can be ignored. It can be left behind. But it's a bit like the law of gravity. We can ignore it. We do every day. But it doesn't mean it's not there.
Right.
So what I would like to do is I'd like to draw people into this place where I say, when events happen which are synchronous, the very first thing we have to do is to notice them, because we can very easily just say, just chance, and that's the end of it. And when we notice them, especially when we're working over, for instance, a long period of time, a lifetime, and I work with memoirists, this comes out again and again, what we realize is there is a pattern in life. And this pattern asks us to pay attention to it. And if we don't pay attention to it, it isn't there. If we do pay attention to it, we can see that somehow we're being given hints which say, do this rather than that, if you like. We still have free will. Do this. If we take the hint and say, I seem to be pushed this way, it will lead on to more and deeper and further hints that let us know on the path. And that's why I called the book The Path of Synchronicity. Mm-hmm. So this, it's not a definition. I think no human being could, in fact, define this particularly. It's beyond us. But we can observe it in action. And this is what I do. I observe it with people and I say, wow, it looks like you have, and substitute whatever term you like, a guiding hand.
A signal.
A signal, yes. A guardian angel. And when you start asking around, people go, well, yeah, I guess I thought my life was going this way and what it needed to do was go that way. And when it started to go that way, it flowed.
Right.
So in that space, we're in the space of synchronicity.
You know, in my work, I attempted to define it as representative of the fact that things are related in time as well as space. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, in modern science, we hardly take time into consideration at all. A controlled experiment that's conducted Tuesday morning is expected to come out exactly the same on Saturday night. We don't factor in, we just ignore the whole timing element, whereas synchronicity is all about synchronized timing and meaningful coincidences, as Carl Jung called it. And you know, you make a good point about this meaningfulness aspect in your book, among many good points that you make. I thoroughly enjoyed the book, and I want to recommend it to all of our listeners. But you make the point that if we admit that synchronicity exists, if we admit that coincidences can have meaning, or often have meaning, and maybe always have meaning, we have to accept the fact that there is a purpose to life, that there's a divinity that shapes our destinies, and that we may have a purpose on earth that's bigger than our next shopping trip. That's a quote. So, you know, I thought that was very profound, you know, that maybe you can unpack that a little bit. How does it, believing in synchronicity is accepting that there's a purpose to life?
Yes. It may sound like a stretch, especially for those people who are anti-religion. You know, there's a purpose in life. No, there isn't. Well, actually, perhaps there is. That would be the starting point. And perhaps the starting point would then continue to say that the next shopping trip is not the biggest thing that any of us are going to be doing in our existence. And so suddenly we have this thought of, oh, it's not about what I can get the next shopping trip or how people perceive me, but it might be about what I'm supposed to give whilst I'm on this planet. What am I supposed to be doing with this time that I have? And you can choose to do anything you like. You can follow your baseball team. You can collect stamps. You can do all of these, you know, nothing wrong with that. Or you can ask yourself, as many people do when they come to me for guidance, they say, well, I don't know what I'm supposed to do. And the answer often is, well, have you tried listening? And that's not what we're good at. We don't listen very much. And I apologize to all the listeners listening to this podcast, but actually we don't listen to ourselves. We don't allow ourselves to become silent, to let the dictates of society and our own egos and everything else, we don't allow that stuff to drop away and ask, well, what is it that I seem to be able to contribute? Because a terrifying answer might be, it's not what you think. You may have trained all your life to be a lawyer, for example. That's my life was shaping up for me to become a lawyer until I said, right there at the interview at Oxford, that I had to say to them, you know, I've been thinking about this. It's not what I want to do. It's not what I'm called to do. And I thought, okay, they're going to invite me to leave, you know, end of my college career before I've even set foot there. Instead of which they looked at me very interestedly and said, oh, so what do you want to do? I said, well, I'm fascinated by literature, mythology, the stories that we tell ourselves. I said, this really ignites my fire. I don't know where it's going to lead, but I know I have to go there.
Okay.
And it was exactly the right thing to say.
Yeah, sounds like it. You know, in the book, you use the expression being in the flow quite a bit, to be in harmony with destiny, and that this is an aspect of synchronicity. Would you say that this is a definition of good luck? I love the word luck. Everybody wants to be lucky.
Yes.
And I used to believe that I make my own luck, and I was lucky. I believed I was making my own luck, and lucky things happened. So what's the relationship between luck and synchronicity and being in the flow?
Very good question. You see, once we notice synchronicities, once we notice that we're being sort of moved in a certain direction, like being in a river, the river has a flow to it, we can be passive, in which case we just sort of bob along, no trouble. Or we can become active and say, oh, here is luck. How am I going to use this opportunity? Is this the opportunity I want to use? Or is this a slightly, or is that going to mislead me? How do I use it for the common good or the greater good? And this is when synchronicity begins to redouble itself. It's as though it comes to you and says, yes, you're doing this right. Here's another opportunity. What do you want to do with it? You know, do you want this one? Do you want that one? So we have to think our way through this. We have to feel our way through this. And perhaps the biggest one, the most disappointing thing to most people, is we have to stop thinking of our own advantage. Because it's not about whether we get wealthy, which is where some people have gone sadly amiss with the laws of manifestation, for instance, which are closely part of this. It has to do with what we are here to express, to give, to become. And it reminds us again and again, it's not about us, it's about the task.
And so this is a kind of a creative aspect. You know, we talk in your book about destiny, and you say the lesson for us is that destiny is all too real. Mm-hmm. How would, you know, talk to us about destiny and what that means.
Okay. Well, destiny, it is most straightforward, is how you get from point A to point B, so from birth to death. Along the way, we have lots and lots and lots of choices about how we are going to spend our time between birth and death. And that is where we need to question ourselves again and again. Now, in the book, I draw a comparison to a very old story that everybody knows, which exists in the Torah, of course, and it's the story of Jonah and the whale.
Right.
And I think this is good because it's a story that people still repeat over and over and over again without quite understanding it. So here is the way I understand it in terms of synchronicity. There's Jonah. He's sitting in this port city. I think it's Jaffna, isn't it? And he hears the word of God. And the word of God says, you've got to go to Nineveh. And Jonah says, I'm not going to Nineveh. They're all barbarians. You know, what a terrible idea. And God says, well, I want you to go to Nineveh. Jonah says, no thanks. And he gets on a boat taking him in the opposite direction. And of course, while he's bobbing around on this boat, there is a storm and the sailors. And this is an interesting thing. All the details that match up here, we really need to pay attention to this. The sailors start playing dice, casting lots, to see who is the one who's bringing the storm to them. And the lot falls on Jonah. And they say, sorry, bud. You know, clearly it says here in the dice, you're the source of the problem. We're going to throw you overboard. And so they do. And that's when the whale comes up. Who knows what sort of whale can do this, and goes and swallows him whole. And then the story tells us he's 3 days in the whale's belly, which is, you know, an echo of what's going to happen later, the 3 days that Jesus is dead and then is revived. And then the whale comes to the seashore, has an enormous belch, and throws up Jonah on the shores of Nineveh. And so everyone goes, oh yeah, clear indication that when God says you should do this, you should do it. But there's a second part to the story that nobody really pays attention to very much. And that is that Jonah says, well, I'm in Nineveh. Okay, what a dump. And he goes to the king of Nineveh and says, listen, my God says that unless your entire city converts to my religion, it's going to be destroyed. Ha, what do you think of that? And the king says, no, no dice. Jonah goes back the next day and says, you know, you've only got 3 days here. This is the second day. Either you convert and all your citizens convert, or my God will destroy your city. And the king says, nah, not buying that. The third day, Jonah goes back and the king says, you know, you're absolutely right. I'm going to convert to your religion, and all my citizens are going to be converted to your religion. And you'd think that Jonah would go, yes, instead of which he's really angry because he got really, really invested in God coming down and destroying Nineveh. And he's really disappointed. And I think that's a lovely commentary on our human desire to be right.
Right.
Be right than do right. So I tell you this story because it's a very long story that everybody knows and most people don't think about, alas, showing us that when the call comes, however it comes, you can call it the word of God, you can call it divine intuition, you could call it a happenstance, it's something written on a piece of paper you pick up. When that call comes, you don't ignore it. You pay attention to it. Maybe you follow it. Maybe it's a bit of a blind alley, but maybe at the end of that blind alley, there is exactly the next hint that you need. So, right. Long answer, Paolo.
I find it interesting. One of the minor aspects is they're casting lots to determine that it's Jonah that's the problem. And there's other instances in the Bible where they cast lots or where the high priest has the Urim and Thummim. And I mentioned this in my book and how, it sort of shows that divination is actually favored by God more often than he's condemning the astrologers, etc. So anyway, that's kind of a side point. You talk about looking for meaning. And you say, do not believe everything you think and think carefully about what you believe. If you are looking for meaning in the world, we may struggle because that is coming from the ego, the brain that wants an answer or something to carry away. I found that fascinating because I've recently discovered that my search for meaning, which has been kind of like very dominant in my consciousness most of my life, is a little bit pretentious. What makes me think that my human brain is going to be able to grasp the meaning of life, if indeed it was available to me. Is that in alignment with what you were thinking?
Yes. I think that because we're human, we can grasp bits of the meaning and all of the corners, like an enormous Hindu belief of the enormous tapestry that is life. If we grasp a little bit of it, it'll give us a hint as to what the whole is. Like something that's pixelated that we can grab hold of, but because we're human, we can't see or perceive the whole thing, and certainly not with our brains. And again, what comes back to the surface in this discussion of synchronicity is it's going to be your heart that says, "Oh, this is what makes me feel right."
Right. Right.
We're a brain and a thought-driven culture. And the trouble with thinking is you can talk yourself into anything. You can talk yourself out of anything. But what is it that happens in the heart? The heart needs the brain, just as synchronicity needs us to take action in a physical world.
Mm-hmm.
So when synchronicity happens, we actually sort of have to do something, like Jonah. We have to take charge, even if it's not what we expected.
Right. Mm-hmm. The title of your book and the subtitle, The Path of Synchronicity, Aligning Yourself with Life's Flow. That sort of implies a central message of the book, which is that these synchronistic signals, if you were, or as they say in the Bible, the signs and omens, offer information to us that we can pay attention to, and that helps us align ourselves with the way that life wants to carry us, rather than, playing God and trying to make things happen and trying to create results. And, like the law of attraction, the law of manifestation, and how people think, well, we can just force things to happen by the strength of our will and obsessing on things. And so so synchronicities are worth noticing and paying attention to. I often have made the point, synchronicity is happening all the time. It's just that we don't notice it that often. But if we do, then we can use it to align ourselves with the flow of life. So this is kind of, you're bringing up a definition of the flow of life.
Yes.
And, that's synchronicity could tap us into.
Yes, it can. Yeah.
And that's, do you have anything to add to that?
Well, I think that's a very good description of what synchronicity does. It requires us several things. It requires us to acknowledge it's there. So, okay, there is a thing called synchronicity, right? That takes a big leap of faith. Then we have to notice what the synchronicities might be. And then we have to take action on them. We can't just say, oh, well, that's nice. Aren't I lucky?
Right.
It requires us to take action. And that action might be uncomfortable.
Right.
But it doesn't necessarily mean it's not important. And this is where many people fall down. You know, why should I do that? There's no money in it. That's the one I hear most often. In fact, I hear parents saying that of the students who come to my college. You know, well, we're not going to have him study that because there's no money in it. He's got student loans to pay off. He'll have to be one of these.
Right.
The student is sitting there saying, yeah, but I really feel that what I need to be is, you know, fill in the blank, artist, painter, all the, you know, any of those things that don't usually produce a steady income stream.
You know, do you think that synchronicity or awareness of synchronicity or what you might call synchronicity consciousness kind of falls somewhere on a spectrum between nihilism and wishful thinking?
Well, that's an interesting way to put it. Yes, of course, it can fall into wishful thinking. People can have inflated ideas of what they think they ought to be. And we have to take care of that. I mean, we may want to be the greatest, whatever. We may want to be something we're not fitted to be because our ego, our self-love takes us in that way.
Right.
Nihilism is also self-serving. People who claim not to believe in anything are basically saying, I just want what I want for me.
Yeah, I'm smarter than everybody else.
Yeah, I'm smarter than everybody else. They're all dumbed. You know, they're all dumb clucks and that's it. But what I show in the book is that there is a long tradition of literature and myth that basically has the main character going on some sort of journey. And this goes all the way back to the gods of ancient Sumer. Inanna, for instance, we find this with Inanna and Gilgamesh, which is one of the first pieces of narrative we have. And in each case, the chief character has to go through a ritual journey which involves stripping off or removing all of the consolations of the ego world. In the case of the goddess Inanna, she has to go into the underworld and she goes through seven gates to meet her dark sister, basically her opposite, the destructive sister, Ereshkigal. And she has to leave some of her royal trappings at each gate until she stands naked in front of her sister. And when we meet our shadow self, to use a Jungian term, when we meet the repressed, destructive, angry, self-serving, nihilistic, very good word you chose there, self, when we've met that and we've agreed, this is part of us, but it's not the biggest part, then we can say, now I need to proceed with my ego in control, with my wishful thinking serving me rather than me serving it.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with ego. We have to regulate it. It's like emotions, you know, we have to regulate the expression of our emotions. Oh man, Aunt Ellen, as usual, there's so much more we could explore, and you get into the whole area of the relationship between the shadow and the ability to go with the flow. I wish we could have talked about that and maybe next time, but we've run out of time today.
Yeah. Well, we always have such great conversations. It's never to run out of time.
The show is too short. But I want to be sure before we leave to tell our listeners about your website, which is www.alanhunter.net. Alan Hunter, all one word, .net.
And Alan with two L's.
And Alan with two L's. For those who might have tuned into Pathways late today, this is your host, Paul O'Brien, author of Intuitive Intelligence, a book that shares the theme of Pathways and talks all about synchronicity, which is personal and cultural evolution. Now, don't worry, you can play and or share this interview whenever you want via the internet or as a free podcast, and I'll tell you how in a minute. Today, we've been visiting with Alan Hunter, author of The Path of Synchronicity, Align Yourself with Your Life's Flow. I want to say thank you to all of our listeners for tuning into Pathways, which is broadcast and streamed on the internet at www.kboo.fm every Sunday morning at 8:30 USA Pacific Time. Even better, podcasts of today's show, which you can listen to and forward to others, are available for free at divination.com, and that's spelled divination.com, as well as via iTunes, Paulo's YouTube channel, and other free podcast servers. This is Paul O'Brien reminding you to tell your friends about Pathways Radio and Podcasts. And thanks again to Alan Hunter and to all of you listeners for tuning in and being a part of the Pathways conversation.
Listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
Election season is here, and at KBOO, we want Portlanders to be prepared to face their ballots with confidence. We've got a brand new limited series coming to our